Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are here at Coco's Pub. Parrots surrounding me. Huge 11-ounce crab cakes as big as my head, as well as the Back to the Future scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. Lucky batch. I've been giving them out here. They got a lot of Morgan State graduations coming up around here, and good things always happening in Lauraville. Home of this man. Mike Versigliano is our defending champion, my official co-host with a K, artist extraordinaire, cartoonist, sports cartoonist, the last of a dying breed. And I put this show together on April 30th for a couple of reasons, Versig. A, I knew I might be seeing Pearl Jam in Atlanta on the 29th last night, and I was and did, and I muled myself over here. But April 30th is also, today is the 48th anniversary of Bruno Sammartino losing the Worldwide Wrestling Federation Championship to superstar Billy Graham here at the Baltimore Civic Center.
Wow.
That happened on April 30th, 1977. And the Orioles are taking on the Yankees. And I got to be honest with you, bro. When I put this together, the last time I did the show here was a Cup of Super Bowl. You were here in February. We do that for Maryland Food Bank.
So much fun.
St. Francis of Assisi, which I passed on the way coming up here at Chesterwood Park. And I thought, Orioles-Yankees... Marcella didn't want me in here in May because it's too crowded because of graduation with Morgan and all that. So I'm like, I'm going to get in here in April, last day April. We're going to do the Wednesday. And I'm going to do that because the Orioles are playing the Yankees.
Sure.
And I thought to myself, we're doing this crab melt thing tonight that you're going to be a part of a little later on. We're recreating the Burke's crab melt, which I know you probably have.
Oh, the Burke's one. Okay,
great. We're doing that today. I mean, that's...
That's pretty cool.
It is a serious thing. Get your wife. Tell Terry to get down here. We're having Burke's Crab Melts and Coco's. So I figured tonight would be maybe friends in the neighborhood. Maybe Dr. Steve and Allison would want to come over from LA Car. Like some friends would come by tonight. We'd fill the bar here with conviviality. The Oriole game would be on.
Right.
And when I put this together on February the 10th or whatever, when I started looking at the spring, like I'm at Red Brick Station next week. I was at Costas and Fadley's, all the other places. I put all my scheduling together around baseball,
this
the
series,
Orioles, and prosperity is what I did.
Ooh.
I knew you'd be wearing your Oriole white paneled hat. I told Costello you'd be wearing that hat.
Oh, is that right?
I told him you'd
be
wearing that
hat. It's a giveaway hat. It's a cool hat, you know. But, yeah, I mean, I'm in deep distress at this point. Like you
are you
like
in denial or are you in distress? Where are you?
I'm more in distress. I mean it looks like we've got real problems, so I'm not denial would not be the word. I'm not sure how we're going to fight our way out of this unless a lot of pitchers get healthy all of a sudden, and that doesn't seem to happen on this team right now. This just seems to be a team of injury prone starting pitchers, and then they get healthy, and then they get hurt again. So this is not a staff. It's one of the worst staffs in baseball right now. It's one of the worst records in baseball, and one of the worst pitching staffs right now in baseball.
Well, I got to lay that on Elias, right? And I got to say to myself, the 100,000 feet, not even the 50,000 feet. New owner, Moneybags, doesn't know anything about baseball, right?
Right?
He's kept most of the Angelos lieutenants around, which is one of the reasons I don't have a press pass tonight and Luke does, right?
Right.
So, because there's no reason to not give me a press pass for David Rubenstein. Angelos had no reason to take it away, but Angelos was Angelos. You don't want to be like him. So I've tried to explain all of this away, and I wrote my letter to Katie Griggs, which I hope you read, and I hope everybody read last week. I would just say this for this team. I've been bullishly supportive of them.
Yes.
I have believed in the pitching. I am an excuse maker for them in regard to Bradish, Rodriguez, Means, Wells,
Eflin.
Just go down. The acquisition of Corbin Burns, the acquisition of Zach Eflin, brilliant. The signing of Charlie Morton, the signing of Shigano, how much money they got, one-year deal. The day those signings were made, I made sense of them. Even if they didn't make sense, I said, you know, they're going to need a reliable fourth or fifth starter. They're going to need a veteran guy like Charlie Morton. He was okay last year. I'm just going to assume Father Time hasn't found him at 41, right?
That's exactly the way I felt about it, too. I mean,
well, I'm trying to be optimistic and buy their BS until I hear that it's BS, and now I feel like the whole thing. The owner gave a bobblehead of himself away last week. That is not a good good sign.
I mean,
really isn't a good sign, I would say.
It would have been a fun thing if we were winning, I think. I just the idea that he sort of, at least that last year, was a celebrity. So that's what you do with bobbleheads. He was a bit of a celebrity here when he was buying beers for everyone. And you know, the whole...
Is that all you have to do is be a billionaire and buy beers to be a celebrity?
At the time, that
How
week,
about you do good week, ownership, and then we'll make a statue of you, and you won't have to make a bobblehead.
I think we expect a good ownership at that point. But for that first week, if he would have put a bobblehead out that week, it would have been well received. Now,
I can't even feign being angry when I'm eating crab soup.
It makes no sense right now, you know? But to go back to Charlie Morton, you know... What I didn't like about those two signings was that they were one-year deals. I mean, it was smart to sign Charlie Morton for one year, but they didn't make any commitment to future pitching by those signings. More one-year deals, a really old guy, and you just hope that he, you know, hadn't flattened out as a pitcher, and he has. So it's a disaster. 2 years in a row.
Kimbrel.
Yeah, Kimbrel and then Charlie Morton. $28 million worth of, you know, wasted assets there.
Well,
thankfully, one-year deals.
Picking things up to where it's going to get better. You know, what's going to make it better? Where's the cavalry? I thought Kyle Gibson was supposed to be the cavalry, right? Right, ooh. Right. And that, there's just been so many things that have been problematic about all of it. But the hitting. I looked at some stats today. What's it like? Westberg 0 for 30. Rutschman's had an 0 for 20. You know, all these guys have had 0 for teens and 20s during the first month of the year. It's hard to go 0 for 30 ever in the big leagues and still be in the big leagues, right? Like,
and
that's
hitting,
hard to do.
They're hitting with men on base is terrible. Like, it's near the bottom of the league, and it's been near the bottom of the league since the middle of last year. You know, they were peaking in May, I guess it was, last year, it looked great. And then all of a sudden, wheels started coming off. And since that time, that's like almost 162 game. Might be less than that, but almost a full season worth of not hitting with runners in scoring position, not hitting with runners on base for this team.
Well, the pragmatist in me said, you can't sign Burns because he doesn't want to be here.
Right.
Do you want to give money to Crochet? Do you want to deal for Dylan Cease? The window shut on Scooble once they started. I mean, right. Obviously, we saw what he was about over the weekend. And we'll get to them not hitting left-handed pitching as well. But, you know, the Japanese signing in a vacuum, three-time Cy Young winner, that guy is a grown-up. You know, I think we saw that on Monday night,
yes.
Right? Tuesday night. Monday night. Get my days and nights mixed up this week. I just, the philosophy of not drafting pitchers, not having pitchers, that Elias has run the thing for 7 years and got his first pitcher to pitch his first pitch last week, Brandon Young, right? Like 7 years.
Is that right? Wow.
He has not drafted a pitcher who has pitched a pitch in the big leagues until Brandon Young did last week, right? And
right.
That didn't even go well. You can't build a franchise without pitching. You can't, and you can't buy your way out of it. Even when you have the money for Corbin Burns, you can't buy it. And it's philosophical, and I don't know how you can be down on Elias and Mydell and Brandon Hyde after they won 192 games right. The last 2 years. I don't know that this is general manager or manager as much as it's philosophical about the value of pitching and how we're going to get it. I mean, how are they ever going to get it if Angelo still owned the team? Because Angelo's wouldn't have been paying Japanese pitchers $15 million. You know,
right.
Angelo's wouldn't have put $80 million into the payroll this year the way Rubenstein has. I mean, so from that perspective, Rubenstein has met that challenge of putting more money in. There's been that.
Yes, right. I was kind of on board with the whole not prioritizing pitching in the draft because – it's just riskier, and we saw that with the history of this team. I mean,
you know what else is risky? Not having any of it.
Well, that is.
I'm just being. I mean, being frank with you, right?
Absolutely correct. I mean, that's an eye opener for me because I thought this is smart. We've built up this incredible collection of, you know, hitting talent on this team. We trade some for pitching, but it just hasn't played out that way. You know, it just hasn't been.
Well, the hitters haven't hit. If the hitters were hitting, they wouldn't appear as awful. Luke even did some stat that would make Rob Long and Melanie Newman happy. Luke said, if you take Charlie Morton's terrible, all of his starts have been terrible. They've lost every game he started, right?
Right.
Six starts, 0-6, 0-7, whatever it is, right? If half of those were half okay and they won those games, they'd be a 500 team.
Yeah, they'd be, you know what I mean? They'd be like, right in the thick of the pennant
race.
That's
how bad it is to have a pitcher taking a turn every 5 days who's giving you no chance to win, literally no chance to win.
Oh, I get it. I don't know what to do with that. You know, they're – you know, you've got it. I think they have to hope he comes around and you know.
Well, they don't have
pitching,
any other option.
Pitching in – well,
he's going to get the ball.
He's pitching in middle relief lately, right? The
well,
last few
and that,
days. But he's got to work it out in middle relief and then comes back. I mean, look at – there's a couple of premier closers right now. I have them both on my fantasy baseball team. You know,
well, Devin, you're a better general manager than Mike Elias.
Devin Williams of the Yankees and Class A on the Guardians that started out so terrible this year. And, you know, they're basically letting them work it out in middle relief. And once they're back to what they're doing, they'll be back in their spot.
Pitching is it's like vapor. You know what I mean?
Oh,
grabbing on to Greg Maddux or grabbing on to Jim Palmer or grabbing on to one season of Chris Tillman, one season of Kyle Bradish, right? One season of Corbin Burns, 1 month of Tomoyuki Sugano. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Just
it is fleeting. I mean, if you've got a premier starting pitcher like Skubal, you've got gold. Because there's not that many of them in
and there's
in Major
something
League
about that guy pitching every fifth day that affects the day before and after him too. It's not like he just pitches one. You know, when you have a one, I think it messes up the other team in whatever way.
Okay,
the mismatches, the way you approach a tough left-hander. I mean, the Orioles used to wave a white flag, right? They would play Jeff Rebele at first base against Randy Johnson, right? They would just say, we're going to put our Sunday team in. Gary Sanchez is going to play because we don't want to hit a left-hander.
Yes.
The Orioles are almost allergic to left-handed pitching right now as an organization.
Yes. So, I mean, Santander, he was a righty?
Santander to me was about money and about length of contract, and this was really an Elias decision, right? Elias decided we can get by with less signing Tyler O'Neill, who you knew was going to be hurt because he's always hurt. Santander was hitting 195 or something like that the other day. I mean, Santander is not having a good year. So we can make that case here that he feels like a missing ingredient here. But everything's missing here. Gunnar Henderson's power is missing.
Yeah.
Adley Rutschman's missing. Colton Cowser's missing. Now Westberg's missing. Everything's missing, you know.
Yeah.
Marth, that soup's ridiculously delicious.
Hi, Marth. How are you?
Get those crab melts ready. Rasig's ready. He's skinny. We got to fatten him up. We're going to do that. Well, whenever we're done fixing the Orioles, then we're going to have celebratory crab melts here.
Could be midnight meal by then.
Are you done with the Orioles? You want to talk football or you want to do more baseball?
I needed to know your thoughts on the Ravens draft anyway. So I was interested in how you felt, particularly about the – I had a problem with the second pick in the draft. I did.
Go ahead.
You know, I just thought that this is a team that, has a policy that clearly –
That
they
was me
just,
laughing out loud, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, of course –
It's a joke.
It's a joke. And I think it became a further joke there. You know, that's I when I first saw we picked him, I was delighted because I didn't know the background on the guy. But once I saw the background, I'm like, how do you make a pick like that?
Here's where I am, okay? And I'm telling you this because I've known you. You're my oldest friend in media, literally, right? I met you in 1984. Mike Rosigliano is our guest, the fantastic sports cartoonist Rosig. He's my co-host with a K. He's going to be co-hosting and helping me watch the Orioles play tonight here against the Yankees and eating a delicious crab melt. Here's where I am with the Ravens. And I'm being, like, full sincerity. You get a full shoot interview with me, right?
Yeah.
We lost the Colts here in 83. I met you around that period of time. You drew, famously, Bob Irsay cartoons for the community, right?
Yes.
We've been through that here, right? We've been through that. We were through Art Schleister at that point.
Oh, yeah.
A stolen franchise.
Right.
A fat, drunk, lying owner.
Right.
Who was, lied about everything.
Yes.
The league turned its back on you, me, John Stebman, and everybody else,
yes.
Right? The big wheel, everybody, right? Loudy, Loud, and Slager. So we lived through that. Then we lived through the shame period where we served crab cakes, literally, to Bill Bibwell, are Al Davis, Georgia Frontieri begging everyone to bring us a franchise, right?
I went to some of those games.
We did all of that, right? Yeah. You went up to Philadelphia with the Ursay dummy. We did all of that.
I did the This is the
skid marks I have down my backside that Chad Steele has no respect for, no knowledge of, no comprehension of, no respect for anything.
Right.
And I thought Bisciotti had respect for this stuff, which is why when I wrote him that note 3 years ago when he's throwing me out of the media, knowing I'm a media member, looking the other way and pretending like it doesn't exist, that the last couple of years since I don't give them money anymore, I got off a plane this morning from Atlanta, and you say, why do you fly to Atlanta to see Pearl Jam? I'm like, well, I don't fly there to see the Ravens anymore. I don't go anywhere anymore. I don't go with the baseball team or the football team. So I pick my spots. But When the Ravens came here, and I was down in parking lot D with Peter King, and Paris Glendening's holding up that Browns glass, you're still writing cartoons, 1995, 96.
Sure.
This happened November 95. There was a point where this team came in here, and they were, to everyone on the outside, the stolen Barney. You could have been the prick cartoonist and been negative on them, negative on stealing the team, negative on Art. Drew Art is a moron. Drew Art as the dogs kicking him, the way Sports Illustrated, the way Art was being portrayed at that time. And I gave them the complete benefit of the doubt, as well as a check for my PSLs. I tried to get to know them, meet them, wondering if they're good people, wondering if they all the reputation from Cleveland was bad or not. They're both dead. They've been dead for a decade, right?
Right.
Those two guys never, ever lied to me. Ever. From the minute I met Art Modell to the minute he died, the minute I met David, if I had a call in the middle of the night with a question with Kevin Byrne, any of those people, Brian Billick, Marvin Lowe, talk about any of those people. Now, you have Ray Lewis's transgressions. You had Jamal Lewis. You had Ralph Staten running around with a gun. You had things going on in that organization that didn't make me proud. I called it a poor sucker's license in front of Roy Summerhoff when he was trying to sell them in 1996, right? So I never saw it as an investment or any of the bouja that they gave me. But there was a point of being a community partner, of me getting the flying B on my hat and then getting the other B when they called that disputed and David gave the markings up. There was the first Super Bowl, the second Super Bowl. There were hearing Ray Lewis get called a murderer for 15 years, which I did at every stadium I went to, hearing all of that.
Right.
All the purple bird, we're the tough guys, we're going to be the bullies on the block and all of that stuff. And then the Ray Rice thing happened, right? And that was, in a sentence, disgraceful. Every part of it was disgraceful. They're burning jerseys down there. Then they put him in, they haven't run, they might as well put him in the Ring of Honor now. He is completely washed away from anything he ever did. He's coaching. They're paying him money to go shake hands in the suite level and take pictures and do all of that, right? So he's been deodorized and fixed. And the franchise in the 12 years since Ray Rice has been rudderless. I mean, in that way, in the way of they win football games and nothing else, how they treat anyone, whether the stands are full, whether they come out and do things in the community, good or bad. But this Tucker thing, and we haven't talked about it because it barely happened the last time we got together.
This is
disgraceful from a community standpoint of using power, misogyny, sexual favors in professional circumstances, the denial of it, then the pointing the finger at the media. The media are the scumbags. They're the bad guys. It's that dirty media that did this to me. Justin Tucker, boo-hoo. 16 women. Right. The fact that he's still on the team as we're sitting here talking about it, and that they drafted a kid with problems, and that the offensive tackle that hasn't been good enough to be a Raven, hadn't been on the field, but he's got a Cleveland name, that they gave him money 3 weeks after he gets a DUI. For you to say that there's a policy, I'm ashamed of them. You know what I mean? For what they've done to me and my family in front of everyone, and everyone, if you're a Trumper or you hate me, you can deny it. They took away my career in the prime of my career for spite, for meanness, for kicks, for sport. And they want no criticism of their team. The coach doesn't want real questions. The general manager is a coward hiding from all of this. They're all hiding from it. They're pointing to the NFL. And I'm telling you, dude, from my heart, from a guy with a closet full of Ravens memories, a closet full of Ravens stuff. My next dear Ravens letter is just going to be that I'm ashamed for them.
You're not jumping ship, are you?
I'm ashamed for them.
I'm not. My opinions aren't quite as strong as yours, Ness.
I don't know what else to say. They drafted a kid this week that they have to make excuses for coming in.
I watched the press conference.
That's not zero tolerance.
I watched the press conference. I thought it was uncomfortable, but I've talked to a lot of Ravens fans who are, happy. I think we'll all probably be happy when we see the guy on the field.
The fan base has become sycophants, dude. I don't know what to say. If you can't stand up and walk in here and at least look at me and say I'm a media member and Chad Steele's full of manure, if you can't say that, if you can't say that to Steve Bisciotti and John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta, then you don't want accountability. If you don't want me there asking questions and they can excommunicate me and try to end my career after four decades of doing this, in a really sleazy, nefarious way. And I know information about things that have gone on in that building that should not be going on with employees. Things that have happened there that have involved lawyers, that have involved women, that should not be happening in their building. I am ashamed to be on the radio or in a bar having to act like this zero tolerance policy is anything other than laughable, Rasig. I don't know. You've known me 40 years, man. I want to love the Ravens. I love the Ravens. I gave them all I had.
I love the Ravens.
This is what they make the media and their own make excuses for Mike Green.
The guy is not guilty of it, so that's the one thing you can say about him. But that's, the reason there was a reason he dropped, and there was a reason a lot of teams passed on him. So the Ravens drafting him is not a stroke of brilliance. It's a stroke of he just kept dropping because other teams were unwilling to take the chance on the guy. Maybe it'll pay off for him. Maybe he'll end up being a good dude. I don't know. Maybe he'll be free of all those things. But if you've got a zero tolerance policy and you've got an issue like Justin Tucker on this team,
in the middle of it,
exactly, then you can't make that. I don't think you should have made that.
31 pick. Other teams couldn't. Three times they went through, right?
Well, twice. Realistically, he wouldn't have been picked till the middle of the first round, say, right? But still, at least 15 teams.
Every team in the league that needed a pass rusher looked at him and said, nah, we'll do something else right now.
Right, that's right.
Or we'll wait later to take him, which was the Ravens' policy. So that's not a zero-tolerance policy.
Right, right,
that's
right.
A mitigated risk policy is what that is.
That's a mitigated risk policy.
And I don't know what
that's
the risk
good, that's
is.
A good way to
what difference does it make if Justin Tucker did or didn't do this to these women? They don't care. They don't care. And so 2 months ago after you and I did the show here, my wife and I were having one of those morning conversations when we get out of the shower. She's naked doing her hair, doing her makeup. I got a towel. I'm soaking wet. We started this BS and drinking coffee, and we're talking. And she's doing her makeup in the mirror, and she's doing her eyes. And I get out of the shower. She's like, what do you think of this, Tucker? This is early on, 2 months ago.
Right.
And I said, I think he's done. They can't have this. And besides, he's not that great a kicker anymore. And they probably deep down know what a creepy dude he is. So let's get rid of him. And Jen looked at me in the mirror, looked up in the shower mirror, and she's like, "He is a really good kicker,
Exactly,
so
my
that's
thought.
My wife making an excuse for a guy who went around allegedly to 16 women and pulled a stunt on a power play of, do you know who I am? I'm a man and I'm so powerful that you can't call the cops on me. You can't do anything. And if you say I did anything, I'm going to call you the dirty rat. And if it ever winds up in the media, I'm going to call them the dirty rat. And if there's 16 of you from 16 different worlds that find a reporter and tell this reporter this, I'm going to deny it and run from it, keep my job, and the Ravens or some other team is going to sign me and give cover to me.
Right.
So the Ravens know he's going to kick in this league again.
Yeah.
He is going to kick in the league again. He's going to be convicted of nothing, guilty of nothing, and make $4 million a year for the next couple, 3-5 years again. All of that's going to happen. So,
they did draft a kicker. But
to my wife's point, he's a really good kicker. And if you're a really good pass rusher, somebody's going to draft you, Mike Green, right?
Oh. Absolutely, and dude, I'm as guilty as Jen because, as you know, I'm a Bills fan, And when all the stuff went down with O.J., I was the last guy to believe that O.J.
did. What about Matt Ariza?
What about who?
Matt Ariza, the punter. All that went down on him, too.
Right, yeah. That all went down on him, too, yeah. I mean, I wasn't following that as closely as I was when O.J., when I was even more invested because I was living in the city. But, yeah, I was like, he couldn't have done it. He's too good a dude.
He's O.J. Simpson.
He's O.J. Simpson. He's our running back. We need him. That was my thinking. And again, on the green guy.
By the time he was murdering people, he wasn't a good running back anymore. He was just a great American celebrity that could get away with murder.
Well, that's the other thing is the value of.
I know another guy that can get away with murder. The guy running the country.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Sorry, everyone who doesn't like that, but of course, exactly right. Exactly right. So, Mike Green, I'm sure when he starts playing, you know, I'm gonna be cheering when he's doing this stuff. But it's left a bad taste in my mouth that they drafted him. I just thought it was an unwise thing to draft him. That's all. Given
what is
given
being unwise? Are you gonna not buy a ticket? Are you gonna not go to the game?
No, I'm not gonna.
Okay,
do that.
Well then there you have it. But there you have it.
It's a bad look for the team, just like you explained.
They don't care about bad looks.
I know the president doesn't care about bad looks, but I would think this team
if they cared about bad looks, they wouldn't be intimidating journalists in the middle of press conferences. If they cared about bad looks.
Right. Well, it's a bad look. That's what I'm saying. It's a bad look. That press conference I thought was somewhat uncomfortable, and I was glad the journalists were pressing him on it.
Well, Luke was one of them.
Good. I mean, he should have. You know, like that should have been a question given the Tucker situation and given the policy on this team. How do you justify that? How do you justify that pick? And they claim they had done their homework on it. They had interviewed him. Well, they didn't seem totally comfortable saying that to me when I looked at the press conference. So, yeah, I mean,
Steve Bisciotti gives zero Fs about them, about any of that. They're making $200 million a year. And you know what they care about? Winning. Mm-hmm. That's all they care about. That's all they care
about.
As
fans, we want them to care about winning, of course.
Yeah.
As
at what cost?
Fans, at what cost?
At what accountability? Where's the accountability that comes with that?
I think that's where I had a problem. But, I mean, as far as, you know, football fans that are listening to your show, they're probably happy that Mike Green was drafted. In time, I'll probably be happy if things pan out that they drafted Mike Green too, you know, because he'll be a good football player and maybe he's cleared. But if he's not cleared and, you know, some of this stuff comes back to haunt him, it's just going to be another ugly mark for this team, I think.
Can't you find a guy without sexual assault allegations in an off season where your kicker's being accused of 16 different events?
I think
10 years ago,
there were guys, you know, there were guys that maybe weren't going to drop to them like that.
Can't all be choir boys, DaCosta would always say to me. Can't all be choir boys.
He's right about that. I mean, we're not the only team that has all these kind of, you know, issues. This, look at the Bengals from years back. You know,
Who they going to arrest?
Yeah,
next?
Right. Exactly. So I mean, there's plenty of other teams that have these issues too. I just was hoping that our team would be a little bit above that, and they're not. Clearly.
See what we wind up talking about when a baseball team stinks. we want, you know what I'm saying? We don't need to talk about this right now. They don't play football for 5 months.
The rest of the draft seemed pretty good to me, except for I was surprised they didn't draft any big dudes, you know, on the defensive line. But beyond, you know, and with 11 picks, you thought they'd draft a few.
Would you have done a nasty Mike Green cartoon after drafting him? Would you be of that voice from a cartoonist standpoint?
I think I would have.
Put a little jail cell somewhere in there, a little something?
It wouldn't have been that strong. You know, I mean.
What would it have been?
I'm not.
Proper pup as our Lord, our Savior in the corner, speaking, just like you did in the Oilers cartoon for me. Have the voice of God speaking to Steve Bisciotti and Eric DaCosta and saying, zero tolerance is zero tolerance behind the pearly gates. I'm trying to help him with a
cartoon. That would have been good. That would have been good. No one knows who Proper Pup is except for you and I, but still.
I know about the mystical relic because we celebrated recently, right?
Exactly. It was relic day.
By the way, I haven't mentioned this on the air. It's the first time I'm going to mention it. It's because you're wearing an Oriole hat.
Yeah.
My relative Luis Aparicio celebrated his 91st birthday.
Oh, my God. That's so great.
On Tuesday, the 29th.
Happy birthday, Luis.
And so Luis is the oldest living Baseball Hall of Famer.
I think that's amazing, of course. And
I learned that the day Willie Mays passed. When Willie Mays passed, Louis became the oldest
living. How you doing? Yes.
That's
yes.
It.
Oh, well, I think it's cool. I did not know. It's a great fact. And I always loved Louis Aparicio. So. And he's related to you. I have no. You're also related to Louis Aparicio?
No. Little Louis. I'm Little Nestor. Rasig is here. He is my co-host with a K. We're going to get some coconut shrimp. I tried to put an Oriole Yankee thing together tonight. I'm just going to skip all of that. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Back to the Future scratch-offs. We have these. I have not had a $10,000 winner here yet, Rasig. I'm hoping it's you.
Oh,
so there
man.
You go. Absolutely. Everybody gets
not
it. I feel
chance.
Like Oprah here tonight. You get one. You get a ticket. You get
not
a ticket.
Not a chance.
Howard Perlow is going to be joining us here. He is a local real estate guy. I've never really had him on the air. I have attended his incredible Maryland event. It's a thing in Vegas, and it's hot, and it's at a pool, and it's nice, and lots of people are there. And I got invited for years and years and years, and I finally went last year, and guess what? I'm going back.
Nice.
And not just because Sammy Hagar and the Go-Go's are playing there. I'm going because
nice.
Bill Coles. Bill Coles calls me an ambassador. Can you imagine me being an ambassador for anything other than crab cakes? And Dundalk, maybe. Something like
oh,
that.
Oh, and Dundalk. Of course. You're a great ambassador for Dundalk. And you're a great ambassador for this my neighborhood. I mean, it's appreciated, dude. You know, you've gotten it.
You've lived here 40 years.
Close to 40 years. 40 this August, yeah, for me. On East.
So Rasig screwed up because Rasig is in retirement. He's an artist. A little strange. And he didn't know what day it was. So
I had the wrong day.
I called him. I'm like, are you coming? And he comes in like all out of gas. He lives two blocks away. And he's getting older. And
yes.
But he is on the yoga mat, so he's in peak physical condition. So he ran down here to do the show today. He's like, I thought it was tomorrow. And you're doing – so listen, get yourself a beer because I know you enjoy a beer here. Get yourself a little Natty Bow or something.
Yes.
Mars is going to come back on. Today is a momentous occasion here, not just because we have Howard Perlow on. We had Jamie Costello. We had Senator Corey McCray on.
We are
today – when you come back onto the set in about a half an hour, we're going to have, for the first time ever here on the show, the recreation of the Burke's Crab Melt.
Wow.
Which is, I need a moment. So I discovered that when she sends me home with these softball crab cakes here, 11 ounces, like where her mom's hands were 11 ounces, which is why they're so big.
Yeah.
And I take them home and I quarter them, like 2.5 ounces each. And I get Bay's English muffins. Now, those are the ones in the refrigerated section.
Okay, yeah.
So they're fresh. I take them out. I get the crab cake just right. I take it raw, cook it up, and I make them in fours. And then I take my English muffins, and then I get some extra sharp cheddar cheese. Got to be extra sharp. And I pile that on there, and I put it in the broiler.
Oh, so you make your own. Okay, yeah.
I did this. I did it with a Costas crab cake about 2 years ago. And Costas's crab cakes they don't taste like Burke's did. Coco's crab cake tastes that way. Costas is a little more east side, a little more salty, a little more delicious. Delicious on it. You can make a crab melt any way you want.
Right.
But there's only one place that I take the crab meat home because I've taken it home from. Don't tell any of these crab people. I take the crab cakes home and I fry them in a pan. They don't want to see.
I'm
East
that,
Baltimore.
Man.
We fry it right. So what I did because I'm trying to get skinny and svelte like you, I crab melted, put all that cheese on there. And when I did the Coco's one about a year ago, I went home and I was so proud of myself. I took one bite. I had to, put it down and get up and walk away for a minute.
Wow,
I'm like, that's the Burke's crab. I haven't tasted that in 15 years, you know. And her coleslaw is the exact recipe from Burke's. So the coleslaw with the crab melt, with the French fries, the only thing's missing is a frosted Michelob Light, not that Ultra. Michelob, proper Michelob Light in the silver label that they would bring me in the frosted goblet.
Okay, yeah.
So every time I've had it the last year, I text Mars and I'm like, I am eating that crab cake that you made me take home and said, take it home, your wife will enjoy it. And I wind up making a crab melt out of it. And finally, after a year of hounding her, she has made it the Burger Night special tonight.
Wow.
So
okay.
The crab melt is special tonight.
Is this the first time it's been?
Tonight's the night.
Wow.
Like it's like a Rod Stewart song.
Quite away
from my window.
This really is a moment.
So tonight we're going to have the crab melt. Marsh is going to come on. We're going to do that. I'm going to give some Back to the Futures away for some, late arriving lunch arrivals here at Coco's. They may be coming April because the Morgan State graduation is going to pack this joint. We're over on the east side of town. Coco's is great. Lauraville is great. We're right down the street from Zeke's Coffee. Come on over. Right by Versig's house.
Can I plug one little place that's right down the street here?
I know you love this neighborhood.
It's a place called The Den. It's right down the street from here. It's a nice little bar.
It's speakeasy.
It's a little speakeasy for the, and we've discovered it as a neighborhood. It's a little place to go in, watch some of the games. They got a lot of great TVs. The bartender's name is Mike, young guy.
The Den.
Big Ravens fan, big O's fan. So, yeah, check out The Den on Harford Road. Really cool place.
I went to Atlanta last night. I walked 2 miles from downtown up to uptown to go to this pizza joint that's renowned. It's a Michelin. It was great. It's called Antico. A-N-T-I-C. Antico Pizzeria Napolitano. So I'm walking up there. I saw a couple things. I saw a little robot delivering tacos.
Oh, wow.
It was driving along, and it like got up on me, and I'm like, oh, you got tacos. I got to get out of the way. So I filmed it, you know. But I got on the other side of campus, and I was feeling a little wet. And it was 84 degrees. I was parched. And I saw a sign that said beer. And I went in this bar, and I had to pee. And I said, give me a beer. And the girl gives me the beer, and I said, how much? And she said, $2. I had three $2 beers in Atlanta yesterday. It was like turn back the clock day. It was like 1983.
Oh, yeah. I mean, $2 beers, nice.
Now, Marce loves me, but she ain't doing $2 beers tonight.
No.
$5 beer, maybe, but not $2 beer. Versig's going to go have a beer. Howard's going to step in. We're going to talk about Las Vegas, real estate, Maryland, people, networking, community, charity. What else? That's it. I got it all in. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Back to the Future scratch-offs. We are Coco's. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking to Versig soon. And fun and crab cake. Stay with us.